This episode is brought to you by Builder Prime. Here's a number that should bother you. The average home improvement contractor loses six figures a year to leads that don't get called fast enough and never get consistent follow-up. Not bad leads, leads you already paid for. Builder Prime exists because Jonathan Weinberg saw that while working at a window and door company, watching good leads die in spreadsheets while the team juggled four different tools that didn't talk to each other. So he built the fix. Builder Prime is the operating system for growth-minded home improvement contractors. CRM, estimating, production, payments, reporting, and marketing automation with built-in SMS. One login, one source of truth. Companies that switch see an average 63% increase in sales in the first year. And coming soon, AI-powered business intelligence that lets you literally talk to your data across the entire customer journey. Ask a question, get the answer. No report building, no exports. When everything is in one place, the possibilities are endless. Visit builderprime.com to learn more.
Understanding your why is identifying who your proper representative is in your business that's going to help you meet your goals, right? Why does sales exist for a business? The primary job of them is not just to close orders, but closing clean, profitable orders, they measurable, orderable, installable, collectible, those things that we look at. And then if they're not identifying bookings or clean backlog, then what are you hiring?
Have you ever felt like there's a secret club of successful contractors and you're left outside? Want in? Well, you just found the entry door. Welcome to the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Each episode, we pull back the curtain, revealing the stories, strategies, and secrets that top leaders use to grow their home improvement business and enjoy more success, more wealth, and more freedom. Discover more at thewealthycontractor.com. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. This is Brian Kaskavalsian. And with me today is Dustin Rhodes from Great Day Home Improvements. Welcome, Dustin.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
I've heard about Dustin. He's been in the industry for years. We finally had a chance to have a conversation recently in Las Vegas. And I thought, man, we got to have this guy on and talk about sales, because he is the senior vice president of sales at Great Day, which is like $1 billion+ company. Now, before we get into all of that, Dustin, I want to hear about your background a little bit. So give us kind of like the 2-minute version of your story.
I've been in this industry, I think now just clicked over 25 years. I started out with a company called Paysetter Corporation back in the day.
Paysetter.
Yeah. Learned the brass roots of the 10 steps, right? Forced into there, learned the value of that thing at a young age, which I think gave me a big career bump, right? Then after Paysetter left, worked with a company called Jubilee, assisted them helping to get bought out by Home Depot. And then we left Jubilee and part of Champion back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I worked under the tutelage of Ed Levine. He really taught you how to pay attention to every piece in your business and understand profitability from a granular level. Worked there for about 9 years with Champion. Left Champion, was VP for Home Depot. Left Home Depot, was part of the Renewal by Anderson Network for an additional probably 7 years over there. So worked with some big titans over there, learned what it was like to step in running branches that are 50 million, 60 million, 70 million right now. I guess some of these things are like over 100 million for a single branch, which is crazy, right? But learned the importance of the marketing, you know, customer satisfaction, a lot of different variables on different steps. Worked in Dallas, actually St. Louis, and then transferred over to San Diego. And I was part of the Dreamstyle Network with Don Dewey and them back in the day, helped build Dreamstyle from that. And then obviously we were acquired, as you know, all that fun end story. I left way before that. I could kind of see the writing on the wall. And then actually was at the top 500. And that's where I met Michael Hoy and Ed Weinferner. And then they end up recruiting me and end up coming to the Great Day. I had to prove myself real quick and two of the brands, and then got my promotion up to SVP of sales. And now I'm what I call rowing the boat, helping all 11 brands continue to keep growing.
How many brands do you guys have now?
It's 12 total, right? So we look at that aspect. So we kind of integrated. We have a B2B version, B2C. We got manufacturing plants at full integration, like vertically integrated. You know, I celebrated our Achievers Club trip, right? We took top 125 individuals in the company down to Cabo and we had a pretty cool business meeting and figuring out ways to start and grow our business from our internal guests, aka our employees, right? So we can help better serve our external guests and create the customer for life that we're trying to have.
Yeah. And in 2025, how much top line revenue did you guys do?
Approximately 1.6. So 1.6 billion. Yeah. With a B.
Billion with a B. How many sales reps?
It depends on the time of year, but anywhere between probably about 1,600 to 2,000.
You've hired a lot of salespeople, obviously. Trained a lot of salespeople, managed a lot of salespeople, sales teams. And that's what your book is about. So you've got a book called The Dumb Tax, Find Your Why for Hiring. What does that mean? Find your why for hiring.
Really, the book, when I wrote it, was an accident. I didn't even plan on writing it. I always say arrogance is a weakness, confidence, humility is a strength, right? So at first, I'm like, I'm not putting myself out there. No way, dude. And then finally, it came to the grass during COVID, and I kind of went into it. So we dove into the project because I had people that would fly over the country and fly from like East Coast to West Coast to come watch me run sales meetings, figure out the recipe behind it. It kind of came to a point where I knew I was leaving the company before, right? I had no intention at that point of coming to Great Day, but I wrote the book and I was like, well, you know, I'm going to tell people the reason why the mushy middle exists, right? And I call middle management the mushy middle because there's a lot of focus in on top, you know, on basically CEO level. There's a lot of focus in on the bottom level, which is the sales rep, but we kind of forget about the mushy middle, right? And that mushy middle really is the determining factor. It's the backbone of basically the entire business. In the last chapter of the book, you can actually take a quiz, which will show you what my hard costs were of a sales rep compared to what your hard cost of sales rep and teach you what it's like and what the actual cost of bad hire is within 90 days. And it will make you sick to your stomach when you talk about eroding margins in your business. So again, it's not only a book, but it's actually a workbook that you can either listen on Audible, download our workbook on the dumbtax.org, or you can go to the back of each chapter and there's some questions to get you to think to work on with you and your teams. So again, you could strengthen your process.
So then let's dig into the find your why for hiring. We know why we're hiring because we want to go make sales, but your version is a little deeper than that. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Check it out. My wife is actually a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner. We're a big psychology family. My daughter's going to go into the same thing. And I, way back in the day, studied NLP, hypnosis, and figured out some recipe when business got boring, right? You get a part where you've been in this industry for long enough and done the mundane so much, you want to figure out how to exponentially make yourself out. And I got sick and tired because, you know, home remodeling generally is like a revolving door. You think about, and no one really calculates the cost of that revolving door, right? And it's more of just, instead of a hard cost, right? I always say in business, you know, there's lead indicators, there's lag indicators, right? Lag indicator would be your turnover ratio, which again, kills your procurement cost, right? Which kind of crushes your business. The other part of it is culture. And not only the culture inside your business, but the culture of how the outside industry looks at your business, right? I always joke around, there's a sales rep world out there where all the sales reps have, just like there's an installer world. Or they all sit on the outside and tell you to stay away from places or you got to get in there if you can. Either you're one of those companies that has a waiting list, you know, waiting for people, waiting for a position to open up. You're the people that are begging people to come in and take a job, right? Early in the beginning of my career, I would sit there and I would be the guy who would be rehashing and trying to bring people into the business by stealing it from other companies. Matter of fact, when I came part of Champion, I used to show up on their showroom floor, steal people out of their showroom floor, bring it over to my business at Jubilee, and then we would just turn around and freaking plug and play, right? I wanted the least amount of effort I could to get the best reps I could. Till you actually understand your business unit and what you're trying to accomplish, hiring is not just finding, you know, people that run the leads, because capacity is one of those things. And I gave an analogy the other day that it's kind of like being a head coach, right? You think about being a head coach, where really you're only as good as your players. But even if I have good players, do they know how to play my offense? Do they know how to play my defense, right? Because if they don't understand the operating principles of the business and what success is defined as, then they really have put themselves in a position to lose before they started, right? You ever hear that, hey, good person, wrong business, right? Good business, wrong person, right? So there's variables in there. So I was like, I got sick and tired of hitting it. And then I kind of figured out, later in life, as we all do, I wish I could have rewound back, you know, 25 years ago, or even when I started getting manager, probably 5 years in. So 20 years ago, am I 25? and know what I know now, obviously, I was joking around. So if you could write a letter to your reforming self back then when you first started, how much better would you be now? Well, I think there's something to learn from, I say, the dumb tax we pay, right? And the key dumb tax stands for the price you pay for bad business decisions. Because if you think about it, we've all made them and we learn from those things. Oh, yeah. And that's what prevents us from not wanting to grow, right? It's, you know, 8 of 11 receptors in the brain are based on fear. Mm-hmm. 3 are based off gain. We always try to go towards the gain, what makes us feel good in the moment. And by having people do, but when the people are crap in the bed, they're not the right person, right? So I realized that when I figured it out, I knew how to hire. I started learning how to hire the right way. And I started learning how to build culture the right way, right? Because I think culture is an overused buzzword. And nobody really understands what it means, but we like to say it. It's like one of those feel-good words, right? It's like comfort. Yeah, I want to be comfortable. Sure. Well, what does comfort mean, right? Because until you've had a bad toothache or you've had some kind of like sickness or something, then you really wouldn't know what comfort feels like and you can appreciate it, right? But, you know, culture is something that a lot of people don't understand really what they're chasing, right? And I always joke around, like I see the Rocky in the background, right? I remember several years ago, I got to go run the Rocky stairs, right? I went to Philly, ran the Rocky stairs, thought it was pretty cool if I loved Rocky growing up, right? And I look at, like, in business, just like a poster up there, people have posters that are all over their businesses, right? They have what they call a vision, mission, a value statement, or they've got these things that basically their business principles, and they set on this poster, and then they're left there to die and collect dust. Right. So I always joke around. I said, one of my favorite things to do is when I go into business, I'm like, hey, I'll go to the secretary. I'll go to base the production team, the install, like the measure technician, the, you know, anybody, the support staff. And I ask, hey, why do you exist in the business? Why do you exist for the business? And a lot of them can't answer you. Right. When you think about that, they will, because they think they're in it for a paycheck. And they stay in their bubble, and what they do is so freaking important, they don't realize there's a whole bigger picture that sets outside of it, right? So what I realized is that not a lot of people really know how to interview the right way, right? And the crazy thing is, you know, there's books like Never Split the Difference, all these things that come out into it. We love the theory and the concept and the excitement of the idea. When it comes down to execution, it's not just an execution thing, it's a systemic issue. And I think most people fail in business because they don't understand the difference between systemic and execution, right? Because systemic is systems, right? Execution is lack of following the systems. And that puts you in this whole tier quadrant I won't bore you to death with, but there's definitely a methodology to how we do things, right? So what I end up doing, and you'll see part of this in the book, is, you know, we all understand disc profiles or some sort of it, right? And most of us utilize them. Some do, some don't. Some go off gut feeling, right? And it feel like they're a good guy. I feel like they'd be good in our business, right? How many people do you know that are professional interviewers?
Not many.
Yeah, they suck, right? And then how many people that interview put their best foot forward on the interview, right?
Yeah. So
they probably actually never put on a dress shirt before, but they show up on a dress shirt. They say all the right things. They spent all this money on their freaking resume, right? Which I've nicknamed and coined the lie report. Right. And then again,
did you say the lie report?
The lie report.
That's funny.
The lie report. I call resumes a lie report, right? Because have you ever read a resume that didn't try to impress you?
Yeah.
So there's always a story. There's always a real story, right? It's what you see. And then it's the truth that happens behind it. And there's specific ways you can pull that out of people in an interview to see who's exactly sitting right across from you. I always joke around the book. I talk about stripping them down to their whitey tidies and seeing exactly who you have in front of you. And when you figure out that methodology, it's there, right? So understanding your why is identifying who your proper representative is in your business that's going to help you meet your goals, right? Think about it. Why does sales exist for a business? You ever thought about that, right? Why does sales exist for a business besides going out and creating orders?
Nothing else happens without a sale.
It does, right? But the primary job of them is not just to close orders, but, you know, are they closing clean, profitable orders, they measurable, orderable, installable, collectible, those things that we look at. And then is it good backlog or bad backlog, right? So the whole deal is if they're not identifying, you know, bookings or clean backlog, then what do you hire, right? Slot fillers, basically people that are going to learn. When you figure it out, it comes down to really three pretty easy quadrants, right? These quadrants sound simple, but they're actually more complex, right? Yeah, think about it. In an interview process, what is the number one thing I'm looking for, right? If you look at it, there's actually two main things I'm looking for in an interview process that allow me to know that I've got the right pulse on somebody And there's a third one that the business is responsible for, right? So the first one is making sure capabilities are. So look at capability, right? If I hire someone that's not capable, that's a hiring problem. That's a business problem. That's not a personnel problem because you made the choice. If I hire a guy and I put him on an A team, but he has rock hands, right? Can't catch, but I put him in the position where he's got to catch the ball and I'm losing the game. Well, that's the coach's fault, right? Not the player's fault. There's avenues that go. And the second thing, besides capability, meaning sure they're capable to do the position, is focus, right? How many times do people actually hire people, but they don't set up the right questions, especially being careful with HR, right? Set up the right questions to see if there's any focus issues going on. Have you ever met really talented people, but they're at a weird stage in their life where let's say they're going through a divorce, right? Mm-hmm. Could divorce affect your focus?
Absolutely.
Okay. How about financial issues? Could that affect your focus? How about a sick kid, right? So there's so many things in there that we don't realize that can affect the performance of the vehicle that we're hiring, right? Because think about it, right? You're up for a vehicle, right? They're trying to get you to Dividend Island to build the bookings we need into. But if the thing I hired used to be a premium vehicle, but now it's got a clunky engine, I don't catch it during the interview. Well, congratulations, I just hired that. Now it's really expensive to get rid of it, right? So Again, and what is that person that has that focus issue or that capability issue, you know, when I bring them in, how are they going to fit within my culture, right? Because culture is not built through like talking about it all the time, right? And I used to joke around. I had a buddy of mine. He was a big culture guy, right? The purpose is he had this card, right? A little culture card. But one of the things I realized is like people don't buy into culture because it's written on a card. They don't buy into it because you talk about it all the time. They buy into it because they want to, right? You're building a success engine. And that success engine is like it's a funnel that breeds success, then it multiplies, right? And if you think about that, like it's not what you do occasionally that matters, it's what you do often that matters, right? That's one of my favorite sayings. Not what you do occasionally, they say it's what you do often that matters. And then culture has to be three things, right? It's got to be consistent, it has to be fair, and it has to be defendable, right? If I have favoritism within my team, other people are going to read that, which means that's a culture breaker, not a culture builder, right? And so some of the things you got to realize, I tell you, before you're going to bring on top talent, what's your business structure like? What's your cadences like? What's your routines like? What's the business like, right? What's your customer satisfaction like? So you can attract that top talent. And maybe the top talent that you're looking at, we look at it wrong. A lot of the businesses I look into are constantly looking for what I call retreads, right? And the term retread, in my opinion, is it's somebody that came from another company, right? That we feel is plug and play, when actually it's complete polar opposite. I would joke around. I said, the first system you learn is the one you own for a lifetime, right? So the first system you learn is the one you own for a lifetime. So if I learned a bastardized system from somebody, and I bring them in my business, but I recognize a buzzword like a Yoho, a Grasso, whatever it might be, freaking Jeremy Miner, whatever they're looking at nowadays, right? When I'm looking at these vehicles, I got to make sure I'm putting myself in a position to know what am I introducing in my business? And am I introducing an armchair quarterback? What am I introducing that's going to be an ally or an antagonist, right? Or somebody that's going to help me get to my business. So again, that structure piece of it's designed to help you realize real quick, if I'm introducing them, are they capable of running our play, right? Is the focus of what just happened to their last company, they're too focused on the negative things that happened. Now they're going to bring that in and puke all over my team. In the book, you hear, and I say it all the time, right? 3 seconds of negativity affects the central nervous system for 21 hours. So if you take that and you really think about it, taking a basically sales representative, right? And then they're feeding other representatives, say a room of them, and I allow negativity to happen in the room and I don't set my guidelines or my rules of engagement or my consistent, fair, and defendable actions that happen every meeting, and I allow it to happen, suddenly if I've got one person and he pukes on, let's say, 31 other guys, the girls, females in there, then what happens is he just ruined 31 productive days, right? Because I allowed him to spew negativity on it. Culture has regulations like athletics. If I show up to a sporting team and I show up late, is there a consequence? Okay. Well, I joke around with some of the managers, not a great day, of course, but everywhere else, just kidding, is looking at like this, that what happens if someone's late? What happens if you have a performance issue? What happens? And what's the consequence? Like, well, you know, we get on them. What does that mean? Right. Mm-hmm. So we look at it. I said, let me ask you, if you showed up late for work at McDonald's, what would happen? You get wrote up, if not fired, right? I said, so what you're telling me is a $14 an hour employee, or basically a person that works at McDonald's, nothing wrong with that. But again, if they hold their people more accountable than you do in your team, on your team, then who's the better leader? The people that are consistent, fair, and defendable in their accountability when they know what to expect if it happens, or the person that is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, which you're trying to be their friend, but yet you're trying to bridge that line, then again, you become inconsistent in your leadership, which means you're breaking culture, not building it.
You had mentioned structure and cadence. Structure and cadence as it relates to your organization. Tell me, what do you mean by that? Specifically, I get structure. What do you mean by cadence?
Is the frequency you do things, right? It's frequency I do things, right? So, you know, I believe, you know, business structure, right? You got cohesive, clarity, over-communicate, and human systems, right? If you define it and each box is delivered in to be a system, right? Then again, it's not what you do occasionally, it's what you do often. So again, how often are you communicating the expectation? One of the things I share too is, if you ever had an employee come up with you and they're like, Brian, how do you think I'm doing? You've already failed. Mm-hmm. You've already failed. Because again, they don't understand. They don't understand really what the cadence they're being managed to. And then the manager obviously is not communicating right. And just like a marriage, you know, bad communication equals divorce, which means they leave. So again, what are the things that you're doing to create the right structure and the right cadence in the business? So that way you're introducing them into an environment they can see, right? But if it's unpredictable, then again, you're going to get unpredictable results, and you're going to have people that are always 1 foot in, 1 foot out. And I want, you know, people that want to follow me around wherever I go and, you know, be an advocate, right? But not, I'm their leader. We work together to help them get what they want. And I make sure they can see bigger things, what they're capable of, even though even more than they thought they're capable of on their own, right? So that's, I think, definition of a leader is a dealer in hope. So what are you doing to instill hope into your people?
So let's talk a little bit about the hiring process. By the way, the part of your book that I enjoyed the most was the end, the interview, how you dissected a whole interview. That was fun.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the process. I want you to do me a favor here. I don't want you to look at it as Dustin that's on top of 1,600 to 2,000 sales reps. I want you to go way back, and I want you to talk to that guy from 20 years ago that was running a much, much smaller organization. We know that if your sales team is not efficient, if they're not trained well, all of the stuff that you were talking about, it's going to have a negative impact on the results of the business. And so when we're hiring people, and especially people that, like you said, aren't that good at it, which most of us aren't that good at it, how do we start by defining what it is that we're looking for? So you mentioned a couple of things earlier, and I love the focus thing, but what are we looking for? I want to go hire 3 sales reps. I want to fill a class, and then I want to do it again 2 months later. What are going to give me the best chances of success? So who am I looking for? And what does my onboarding and kind of training look like when I bring that person in?
What you got to figure out is, number one, as a business owner, who's your avatar, right? Who's your avatar? What are you looking at? It's just like marketing, right? What's your avatar? So we take that avatar and we figure out where we want to be. Then who is the best person we need to be talking to that avatar, right? Are they a visual learner, an auditory learner, a kinesthetic learner, right? Because one of the things that, no matter who you are, the brain's predictable, right? The brain is literally predictable. I was joking around with them and I talked about, you know, you can't fight and answer questions at the same time, right? So I play games with a lot of people and, you know, like to mess with the brain, right? But the thing is, when you're talking about, like, I want you to understand your avatar, right? Then I would say, break out a disc profile. And then take a highlighter out, right? And then what are your negotiables and what are your non-negotiables, right? What are you willing to settle for or not settle for? And you're going down, literally constructing your perfect rep. You know, when I was young, I went through this protocol And it said it was kind of a good thing. They wrote it on a board. They said, write all the attributes the best rep you're going to find, right? And I said, next to it, I want you to say one of three things, right? Knowledge, skill, or desire. This says next to it, right? And so write out all the attributes. We wrote out the attributes, positivity, passion, product knowledge, basically inspection capability, all these, you know, all these things, right? Freaking big old laundry list. And next to it, we wrote, okay, does that take basically attitude? Does that take skill? Or is that a knowledge thing? And we wrote down all the way down the crazy thing all the way down. It was attitude, right?
Attitude. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Which is cool, but it's deeper than that, right? Because I can have the best attitude in the world, but if I'm square peg round hole, I'm going to get my teeth kicked in, give up before I start, right? Because again, I think one of the most important things with who you're hiring, what's success mapping, right? So I started figuring out looking outside of the traditional type of sales rep, mm-hmm. right? And I always look at if they're available, what's wrong with them?
Hey, Brian Kaskavalsian here. Can I tell you something most contractors don't want to hear? The reason you're stuck isn't because you're not working hard enough. It's because you've become too important to your business. Every lead, every hiring decision, every customer issue, every problem somehow finds its way back to you. And while the company may be growing, your freedom isn't. That's exactly why we created Success Society. It's a group of growth-minded home improvement business owners who are committed to building companies that produce more profit, run with less owner dependence, and create real wealth. 3 times a year, we bring our members together for a 2.5-day intensive where we work through the challenges, bottlenecks, systems, and leadership issues holding them back. Our next intensive is July 21st through the 23rd in Denver. If you've ever wondered what it would take to get your business to the next level, make more money, and stop carrying the entire company on your shoulders, let's have a conversation. Go to theentrydoor.info and schedule a quick 15-minute call. That's theentrydoor.info. Let's see if Success Society is a fit for you.
That's always my first thought. If they're available, what's wrong with them? Mm-hmm. Right. Because there's a reason they're not employed. Second thing is like when you're reading a resume, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt, right? Because everyone wants to sound good on a resume. And I probably ChatGPT'd that thing and made a sound good thing, put it through resume building services. All these people, like there's so many games that happen before they even get to you. It's there, right? And sometimes we get Indeed. And if you're got a hiring manager, right, you got a freaking stack of hundreds of people that you're trying to get from front of, and you're trying to skinny down into figure out who you want. And again, that could be a pain in the butt too, right? So again, sometimes how you get to your sourcing side, right? Sourcing is one piece, that's a big deal. But again, I'd start out in the most simple terms, grab a disc profile, figure out your avatar, figure out who you need to have. If you built your perfect rep or at least what your tolerable rep is, then basically figure out who you want to hire, right? And then when you're looking in your interview process, what are your negotiables? What are your non-negotiables through there?
I was going to ask you for like your top three negotiables and top three non-negotiables.
So number one, I look at, and I teach you in the book, where the eyes move teaches you their learning type. And the cool thing, when you find someone's baseline, which is really how they tell the truth, right? And there's one way to tell the truth. And then there's thousands of ways people lie. So as I ask you a layup question, like I already know you're a visual learner. I've been paying attention to your eyes your entire time, right? So when you go and look for a question or look for information, your eyes go up. That lets me automatically, you're pulling from visual memory, or basically this allowing you before you communicate and talk to me, right?
That's so interesting because I really am a visual learner.
Yep. But the purpose is when you get it, it's like anything, right? It's like right to buy it. Till you master it, you got to keep working on it, right? And you got to think about it. What's the cost of a bad hire? All right, so again, you calculate it based on your business, but I could tell you an average, you hold on to somebody for 90 days. Let's face it, because we always hang on to people too long. And I love how Brian Gottlieb, I did a book signing with the top 500, right? He goes, you'd be wrong, but don't be wrong for long. That's like my favorite saying out of his book, right? But again, what is too long? That's why, you know, figuring out what your negotiables and non-negotiables are, whether it's your benchmarks, what your benchmarks will set as a business, right? That's up to your unit leaders. But the whole purpose is, again, when I bring them in, again, the capability, do they have the right training, and what's the focus? But my only real non-negotiable is what I find out during the interview, right? So I look at it like, number one, they're going to show up to work. They understand the assignment, right? So if they're going to show up to work, they're going to put in the effort and understand the assignment, that's a big deal, right? If they have the right learning type that we know we get into, remember 60% of people out there are visual learners, right? So if I hire an auditory learner, then that can put me in a bad spot because now I'm trying to close 30% of the population, right? Running 100%. I didn't tell you a workout at all. Tell you a quick story on that, which was really funny. I had a guy in Dallas, and I inherited him, and he was this great, you know, man, you sat down to him, he knew everything there was about the product line we carried, dude. He spit the language, he came out to it. I was like, wow, he probably knows more than I do, and a lot of this stuff is freaking amazing, right? And I was like, but he couldn't close himself out of a wet paper sack. And I'm like, what's going on? And so I went a ride along with him, and I watched him, and he sat back in the chair all comfortable, right? And he's sitting back just shooting the stuff like conversations, like just all spewing out of his mouth, just sounded so smart and so educated, right? But he talked himself right out of the order. He confused him so much because he was an auditory learner. So he felt that the best way to teach was auditory when he was completely talking to a visual learner. So they heard him, but they couldn't see him. They didn't end up buying at the end of it, but I pinpointed and pegged that, pointed it out to him, fixed him, showed him exactly why he needed to show the visual aids. And again, suddenly his results went out the wagon, right? But again, we got to be careful. That's where I say right person, wrong business. And if you don't have people that are going to get out and then figure out where they go, even like voice recording stuff, right? Siri, Arilla, those things like that, it's not going to catch that, right? You might hear me like, dude, they're saying all the right things. I just don't get it. Because you can't depend on one thing in the business. It's like, you know, Ronald Reagan says, trust yet verify, right? So if I'm not trusting yet verifying the business where the failure goes, is there, right? Two is laziness. I cannot put up a lazy, right? Lazy is a dirty four-letter word, and we don't accept it, right? That's the one thing. If you want to work and make a serious six-figure income, we go. I know when I ran my last branch in San Diego where I was like directly around my people, my average rep at 33 of them made about $221,000 a year. And these are on guys that had never sold in the house before, right? They were financial advisors. There were people that came from different walks of life, right? And they're learning it because I looked at it, I'm like, what's one of the biggest tricks this industry is financing. Right, so if I could teach somebody to sell finance, I could teach them basically how to follow a program. Man, this could be dangerous, right? So I started structuring out and figuring out what worked for the business, who my avatar was, who I wanted to sit in front of my customers that I was proud of. I would say sniff test, right? If you'd put them in front of your mom or dad, yeah, or like your neighbors, and you would be proud of them to show up, yeah, you'd be proud of them to show up, then you probably got the right person, right? But if you looked at them and you wouldn't be caught dead even going to lunch with them, but yet they're on your team and they're sloppy, dressed bad, freaking shoes look like they haven't been shined 100 years or just look like they fell out of a turnip truck or look like they had to peel themselves out of the bar last night. Why would you put them on your team, right? Is it because you're in a desperate need, because your business is so broken, you don't know why, right? So again, when you reverse engineer it and figure why it's so important to your business, because literally they're the director, I wouldn't call them the director of first impressions, but they're the director that's going to leave an impression for the next person to set up. They're handing that piece off, right? So I want to make sure that, again, I can't take the lazy part of it. And the third thing is they're willing to chase perfection and land on excellence, right? And that's a cheap saying, but there's a way in the interview process that I screw with people. And I'll give you two questions I think is really fun. I call it right here. So there's a fun one I do. And I'll give you, this is one of my favorites. I'm like, hey, Brian, what's your highest verifiable income? Let's say they say, what's 150,000? My next saying is, why so low, Brian? Okay. And I look at them dead in the face. And the reason what I want to see is if they're trying to justify it or figure out where they're going to be. Because part of getting someone to a baseline of truth is putting them in a situation that they can't just spit an answer to. And the second they have to fish out and get those answers coming, then suddenly you're throwing them off baseline. And now you can tell exactly they're creating what they're saying. They're moving. You've got them nervous in their chair. Then what happens is you give them what I call a couple filler questions and you take them back to the resume page, right? And there's a whole cadence on how to do it. And I always joke around because if you change the way it's set up, then you change the meaning. It's like kind of like presentation, marketing, anything you do. There's always a reason why you do things the way you do it. But one of my favorites that I'll sit down with, I'm like, hey, cool. Hey, if you could erase something from your resume, which one of these positions would it be and why? And they'll go through here. I'm like, sweet. Well, who was your leader over there? Was Brian. Let me ask, when I call Brian and ask him, you know, what your strengths are, what's he going to tell me? Boom. Okay. When I call Brian and ask him what your biggest area of weakness are, what's he going to tell me there? And so I'll use the name, then I get the truth. And I ask them again, what was the position you would say that you were the absolute lights out of your career builder? Was that one? Well, why was that? You know, level of 1 to 10, where you at compared to your peers? Well, I was probably like a 9. Well, why weren't you a 10? because of this. And then, okay, cool. So you probably still remember what you did at that position before, right? Sweet. All right. And you were customer facing on that? Sweet. You like to play games? I do too. Yeah. Okay, cool. So Brian, you're the rep. I'm the customer. I want you to sell me that. And what'll happen, then you'll see them live and in wire instead of like, well, I want to find out what they like for fun, their passion, see them come out alive, right? I'm like, that's so freaking stupid. I mean, I'm not trying to be rude. So if you take it as rude, I apologize, but I am a direct that I've been called many bad names, right? But the whole thing is, again, I'm real. So the thing is, like, what's going to help me understand them? So if I understand what it's like to visit them and watch them in a house in front of me, if I can take you for a test drive in an interview, and I'm not talking role play, sell me this water bottle, sell me this remote control, sell me this pen, right? Which is, yeah, it sounds cool, but it's not really getting you anywhere because yeah. They know nothing about it. They're not claiming to be good at it. But when they tell you that they were the best at this and you ask them, they still remember it, and you can see them come back alive just like they did it back in the day, then you're really taking them for a test drive to see what it would be like to be a customer. And let me ask you, do you want to work with them or do you want to work against them? And it really starts giving you a better idea so you can fact check with whatever profile or whatever stuff you're going to get into there, right? But the gist is, again, what am I trying to accomplish by hiring this person? And I see them into it, even asking things, like asking questions. Right? If I asked you a question real quick and I said, you know, if you start a position here, you know, because everyone comes in telling us the best and you were middle of the pack. And let's say you're basically 6 months in, you're the middle of the pack. How's it going to make you feel? I'm not going to be okay with that. Well, then what are you going to do to jump to the top? What do you think you have to do? And then they're telling you model behavior, right? Just like, you know, let me ask you, every time in your career where you're killing it and then you went into a slump, how'd you get yourself out of a slump, right? So there's different areas in there, like what I call conditional questions and the conditional mindset, even take you through like my mind when I was building the book on how to make it happen. So you're in my noggin. Like you're seeing and hearing the interview and the why behind everything, right? So when you start staffing your team up, you're building a team full of cleaners, right? If you ever read that book, Relentless, right? Cooler, Closer, yeah. Cleaner, right? Yeah. I always call it Cleanerville, right? Your cleaners, you don't want coolers, that's your water coolers, right? That you only use a week higher because that's your slot filler, right? Or they feel like they're a victim or entitlement, that type of thing, right? You want closers because they're generally easy to go. But if you're going at the high Ds, then again, what... And a high, if I have a high D, I hire, there's two things going to happen. Number one, I got to make sure I can manage that person, right? And then number two, are they going to be an archer quarterback, always looking to replace somebody, right? So you want people that want to grow, but you don't want armchair quarterbacks because they're culture killers.
Let's say they've made it through the interview. You've offered them the job. How quickly are you getting them into training?
It depends on when the next training is, right? So when I asked them, if I were to hire you a position, number one, would you accept? I say, of course we would. Okay, why do you think you could make it here? And I go through that type of thing. Then what happens is we set a deadline because I don't believe in knee jerk, right? If I'm having to make knee jerk responses, means I say we got a training class on Monday and I'm trying to fill that training class on Monday. Well, I mean, what chaos am I inviting them into on day one? Or I might not have their samples ready. We might not have iPads ready. Any of the tech might not be set up, name badges, anything like that makes them feel enchanted when they come in. And then it feels knee-jerk and rushed. And I feel like too many companies, they're thinking about checking a box.
I like that a lot, actually. And that takes a lot of discipline to be able to do that. Okay, so what is the onboarding process like?
Number one, I would tell you during the interview, not after the interview, if you're not setting the standards of mediocrity and what it's like to be a day in the life of a rep, then again, I think you've already failed. Right? Because culture, like the rules can't come out on day one, right? Hey, realize you're working evenings, weekends, you know, all these type of things we expect of them, right? But we forgot to tell them about that in the interview. But yeah, on day one, a surprise they left for birthday parties, right? You get a surprise. So again, it's like setting that expectation for the very beginning. So when they do step in on day one, they understand the assignment, right? And so when it comes into it, I think there should be an orientation that you're looking at that tells them how to be an employee. Right? And what's waiting for them on day one, right? If you walk up and it's an empty desk and they're bringing their own notebook and they've got nothing there prepared for them to make them feel enchanted, some swag, gear, whatever it is you're doing to make them feel like they're part of the team already. And I believe like wholeheartedly, day one, I always did this when I ran my branches and my businesses. Day one, they were invited in with the sales team. They would set in a sales meeting productive by me, get to see what it's like to be a life into there. They would be teamed up into it. They would be in the role plays. They would be in every aspect of that business like they were part of the team, because I wanted to enchant them like crazy on day one. When they got a taste of the meeting coming through, they're like, oh my God. Because again, if you don't know how to do a meeting, there's a specific structure you build meetings to. If they're part of that and they feel enchanted and like part of the team already before they get into training, then they go out to lunch with the other members. You bring them back there an hour. Now they're super freaking pumped. Then your business is scared to send them out to lunch because your business is broken. Well, you got to fix your business before you fix your people.
I love that word that you keep using, enchanted. Enchanted. When they come in, you want them to feel enchanted. That's really cool. What percentage of your people that you put through training actually make it out the other end and actually run leads?
When I was leading the last team I was leading, that was about 95% of everybody I put through training came out.
That's right? Pretty incredible. Now, out there in the industry, about what do you think it is?
Oh, probably 50%. I look at it like, you know, because what's the root cause? Does the training suck? Does the onboarding suck? Did the hiring suck? What sucks? Because in order for you to fix anything, you got to understand where it's broken. That's why, again, if you don't understand why you're hiring, what you need you filled, and like where you're failing or what you're missing that's causing the turnover, is there's like exit interviews, right? If you don't do an exit interview because you're scared of what you're going to hear, well, congratulations, you're just going to be like Einstein definition insanity, right? Repeating the same thing over and over again, expect different results. You're not fixing anything, right? It's systemic. So again, is why they're leaving, again, is a systemic issue or an execution issue? And you got to look at the things that you're going to put in place that's going to stop that from happening. And I would tell you, if they're leaving that fast or only a third of the people are staying, and I heard this saying, and I'm not going to say what company I heard it with, not GDI, but I heard this and I would throw up on myself, right? Hiring masses, put them in classes, throw them on their ASSs, right? And I'm like, that's literally the dumbest thing I've ever heard of.
That's a dumb way to run a business.
You're not building any value in your business. You're just turning and churning, right?
And how you do anything is how you do everything. And so their business probably is not super profitable. They're probably turning a lot of sales, a lot of leads and all of that. Probably turning a lot of money, but probably not keeping very much. How long is training? For a sales rep?
It depends on the product line and it depends on the product line and severity. I was big 2-3 weeks. That's what I'd set into. Yep.
Are you paying them to be in training?
Absolutely. One of the things that I've figured out is most week one trainings are a waste of time, right? They're lecture halls, right? They come into there, some guy that's top rep or used to be a top rep, got promoted to trainer. And then literally they're spending an entire week lecturing at the people on how good they were and then what they should be doing. And, you know, just going through and making sure they check the boxes and cover it. But when the people get out, they're just as dumb as they were when they went in. Because again, human attention span is about 20 minutes. So if I'm spending from, you know, 8 a.m. till 5 p.m. training every day, and it's one big ass lecture hall, well, by the time they get out of it, what did they really learn?
Yeah, right? They didn't learn anything.
Yeah, so you don't have knowledge checks. You're not studying that stuff. You're really just doing the training for the formality of doing it, but not really expecting the execution.
What is a rep's schedule look like when they work for you or for another top company?
The schedule, right? We work when customers don't work, but you know, generally an average most remodeling companies run a 10, 2, and a 6, right? Or some version of that. And then, you know, evenings and weekends as well. So we are, you know, really, in my opinion, remodeling industry is a 7-day-a-week business. Most people run into the 6, but you know, I believed in this spot trying to figure out what's fair. And, you know, today's representative is not the same as it was when I was coming up, right? When I was coming up, you know, I sacrificed everything, right? Family right there. I didn't really care. I'm going to go out and chase the dollar, right? Do everything I can do to make that buck. Well, you know, you got to figure your younger demographic, you know, they want that work-life balance. They want those things. So if you're not being forward, if you're not being forthcoming with what the required schedule is, you know, in the interview process or even the pre-interview, I said, really, you're setting them up to be spiteful on even the process. It depends on the business, right? It could be 5 prime time spots, 6 prime time spots, and a prime time's an evening and weekend. It levels everything out because everyone wants to work when everyone's working, right? But people hate to work evenings. They don't want to work weekends, right? So they make every excuse in the world why they can't. But if you're required to do it, and one of the tricks I always say is like, it just like McDonald's, right? I always go back and reference to McDonald's or a fast food restaurant. If you can't cover your shift, what happens, right? So you either have to find someone to cover your shift like they do in the restaurant industry, or you need to show up, right? So there's no two ands about it, right? So that would be considered what I call a no-call, no-show. And again, there's things you can bend on and there's things you don't bend on. As long as it doesn't matter who I'm talking to, it's consistent, fair, and defendable, then they understand that expectations, right? But every day, there should be some version of training, whether the time frame goes into there, what education, maybe it's, you know, some people call power checks, whatever they call it, into there. But there should be some version of that every single day that sets the tone. Because again,
every day that they're working.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
Because are you doing 8 leads a week or 10?
It depends on the business, to be honest with you, right? Okay. So it could be eight or ten. Yeah.
Okay. So five has to be prime time.
Yep. On average, if you're running 6 days a week or 5 days a week, you're running two a day, right? Some people are beast. They try to run three, but sometimes I feel like, you know, unless you're the right person, you get so freaking busy, you miss a deal in front of your face, right? And then figuring out and understanding what the math's going to be. But I believe every day you got an opportunity to reset your focus for your team.
So on the days that they're working, you said there's some sort of training happening.
There should be.
Give me an example.
Okay. Give you a quick one, right? So say we went over yesterday's leads, right? And then you ran leads, came into it every day. You can't have a big meeting every single day. But if every day I can talk about in a lead and I can identify one win and basically one loss, which might be, I might have two ready, but one loss. And then I can walk through the process of what that looks like, you know, what they do good, what they could do better, and what they learn from it, you know, a little role play. And then if I had to do it over again, what would they do different this time?
You're doing this one-on-one?
No, as group setting.
Oh, you're doing that in a group. So is every sales rep coming in every day, or are they there? So if they're running a 2 and a 6, are they coming in that day? Are they required to be in the office that day?
Well, it depends on the business, right? Like not every business operates the same way.
I'm talking best practice.
It depends on how long they've been with the company. I don't think you need to be in every day for some of them. Maybe it's Zoom or Teams or whatever you're looking at. Okay. But, you know, I started way back when a methodology where every morning they came into it, right? Instead of just talking to 30 reps one time, right? Which, think about how much time that burns out. I'm talking to 30 reps at one time, and then everyone's getting the education, not just one, right? So it's things like that that help you kind of move the needle going down. So again, your focus of your business is on that one activity that you might have ran into. And if no one makes that same mistake for the day, well, I just controlled 30 focuses, right? So there's different aspects or five focuses or two focuses, right? Because what'll happen in like small businesses, in my opinion, where there's so much time wasted on trying to handhold and focus on the wrong behaviors and activities, not understand the root cause of why they happen, that it's the like probably 60% of their day is wasted chasing stuff or firefighting, right? And until you really understand where your time's going, you're there. In my wife's favorite saying, I can't take the quote from her because it's so damn good, she'll punch me, right? But it's really good. It says, time is my currency. Your lack of preparation kills my currency, and I will not allow you to bankrupt me, right? And so that those type of things in there where you're talking about time management with your sales team, with your leaders, with your production teams, really doesn't matter. Again, what is directing the focus of the business every single day? I think that's how you make your business bulletproof.
Are there any other things that they're required to be present for?
Well, it depends. Remember that thing we talked about, cooler, closer, cleaner?
Yeah. Right?
Well, if you're a closer or a cooler, you're required every day.
Right? Okay.
But if you're a cleaner, say a cleaner is like a 40% above, then you're not required, but you're invited unless it's a specific product training we're doing on specific days, right?
Yeah.
And then maybe I have them lead the meeting because, again, I want them to feel involved and part of the team and help building. So there's lots of structure and strategy around it that it would take us a month on this thing to even go through that stuff.
Right.
You know, setting the alignment of the routine and the expectation of the routine so they don't bitch. Like the worst thing, like I terminated one guy because he's like, there's just too much training. I'm like, well, you can't be here. Why? Because obviously you don't care about your career. So you care about making sure that you have your time, which I agree with your time. But again, where's your closing ratio? If your closing ratio were there, you would have your time back, but obviously you're not performing. So explain to me why you feel like if we're paying for your leads that you don't need to be trained, right? So there's aspects. Again, it's accountability. And if I treat everybody the same way every single time and is consistent, fair, and defendable, I never have to explain myself for holding someone accountable.
And you know what? We're going to wrap right there because I don't know, that's a pretty damn good way to wrap. And to the listener, if you really think about, maybe listen to what he just said a couple of times, and you're going to get a big, big secret on what it takes to run a really good organization. Dustin, you got to come back because I got more notes and we got to talk about some more stuff, but I appreciate you being here. People can get the book, The Dumb Tax.
Yep. Dumb Tax, Find Your Why for Hiring.
You can get it on Amazon. Dustin is R-H-O-A-D-E-S. And Dustin, thank you, man. I appreciate you being here. And to everybody listening, man, usually Dustin, even me, I'll go and I go back and I listen to these again after they're produced. There is some gold in there. We'll have him back and we'll get more gold out of him later on. But thank you for being here. And to everybody listening, this is Brian Kaskavalsian with The Wealthy Contractor. See you next time. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. For insights on skyrocketing your home improvement business and accelerating your journey to the success, wealth, and freedom you've always dreamed about, be sure to get your free copy of my best-selling book, The 7 Secrets to Becoming a Wealthy Contractor, at www.thewealthycontractor.com. And don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. See you next time.